I believe with every fibre of my being that the course I have set out is the right one for our country and all our people.
What has been achieved today is not Brexit.
I don't believe this government has negotiated fairly or effectively.
Brexit is a lose-lose situation.
We have always followed the EU mandate.
It is utterly unacceptable to anybody who believes in democracy.
Hello, and welcome to Brexit, the final countdown. Sorry that we're a day late, but yesterday I was doing something a little bit more exciting than this. Do you want to know what I was doing?
What on earth could be more exciting than this?
I was an esteemed guest at the Ozone Project on a panel about the nature of truth and journalism and the future of news. It was incredible. I would encourage everyone to scroll through the Twitter moment.
Okay. And what did we conclude? The truth is beauty.
The truth is beauty, and the truth is out there, Paul.
Okay. We seek to find it every day.
Exactly. We do. In vino veritas, I said that.
Oh, also good. You're getting a bit Boris there, aren't you?
I'm very Boris. It's great to be joined by Paul Baldwin, express.co.uk polemicist.
Hello.
And the one and only remaining Brit in Brussels, Joe Barnes, our Europe editor.
Hello.
Hello. I'm, of course, Mensa member and occasional vegan, Becca Hudson. Nice to meet you.
Hello. You know, we said hello, hadn't you?
No, I told you what I was doing.
Okay.
We've got 328 days of transition period left. Let's treasure them.
That's not, well, that's just not enough. So, I want more. Boris wants more as well.
We all want more, so we should probably begin. Okay, on Friday evening, we left the EU, guys.
We did.
Nearly a week ago.
We did.
But this is the first time we've been able to convene as a power trio, so I thought we could just quickly touch on how we thought the celebrations on Friday went, what you were all doing when the clock struck 11 p.m.
I had a little look down College Green, Parliament, and it was okay. A bit muted, very British.
Right.
A little bit more lively up in Glasgow, I hear.
Oh, really?
But maybe it always is a little bit more lively up in Glasgow.
A typical Friday night in Glasgow.
But it was. We were kind of moaning last week that it seemed like a big deal that wasn't being marked very well.
Mm.
Well, it was kind of marked in quite a British way, really. A kind of understated, you know.
A bunch of drunk people with cans.
Well, they weren't even that drunk.
Well, they weren't allowed to drink, were they?
They weren't allowed to drink, so, you know.
Just sort of standing in the rain, singing.
A lot of flag waving. Looked a bit like the people who couldn't get into the last night of the proms, really. We're a bit lost on the way to the Albert Hall.
I think it was a slightly different demo from the last night in the proms. But I hear what you're saying. Yeah. Joe, what was it like on the continent?
It was bizarre. It was quite... I went into kind of one of the local English-themed pubs to watch Sky News in the corner while everyone was kind of sipping on their Guinness and Scotch whiskey and all kind of products from our aisles that are known for. And it was generally quite somber. I think a lot of people kind of felt that while they might have not been actually affected by Brexit, it is kind of a separation between kind of the English people and the British people that made lives on the continent, and now they feel that little bit further distant from home. But I think that was kind of the moment. It was a big moment, wasn't it? We've been building up to that for 3.5 years. And I guess it's that kind of the shock of it actually happening and becoming a reality that kind of hits people.
Yeah.
And so I think we bumped into Nigel Farage, had a few chats with him across kind of the time when he was in Brussels voting for the deal. And he kind of realised, actually, this is 25, 30 years worth of work that I put in, and finally it's happening. The Lib Dems were kind
that
of...
That sounds
kind of,
a bit like you, actually, like, Joe.
What? Generous.
So it seems like the Lib Dems are kind of going, oh, we actually thought we generally once had a chance of stopping it, but now we know it's happened. We can't, like, rejoin. We're not going to get another kind of a reversal referendum for a generation. So kind of that's our recent work out the window. So it's kind of... It's mixed feelings, I think, for everyone.
Yeah. I was... just as a slight aside, but I was... I was shifting some books out of the loft earlier in the week, and I found some of my Douglas Adams collection, and there's one called So Long and Thanks for All the Fish. And I thought that would be the perfect parting gesture from the EU.
Well, that's so perfect. Well, good things come to those who wait. Am I right?
Indeed.
Indeed.
Yes.
And then on Monday, it all kind of flared up again. Brexit was done, but it really isn't done, is it? And the sabre rattling, I believe is what you call it in media cliche, between Barnier and Boris began again, where Boris kind of made this sort of pretty punchy speech about how there will be no alignment, there will be no free trade agreement that will involve accepting EU rules on competition policy, etc. blah, blah, blah. And then obviously we heard Barnier saying, Joe, I don't know if you want to come in and tell me what Barnier said, because I now actually can't remember.
But, well, he said the complete opposite. He said he wants Britain to kind of dynamically align to the EU's kind of state aid and competition rules. He wants to see no regression in environmental workers' rights and kind of those kind of good standards, like safety standards. Fishing is a precondition to have a fisheries deal that looks a lot like that kind of the hated common fisheries policy that we've heard kind of campaigners, Brexiteers speak about. He wants that basically built on for a future fisheries agreement between the EU and UK as a precondition for the deal. So we've got red meat on both sides of the channel. So we're kind of getting ready to lock horns and smash heads together and actually try and how do we come together to do a deal when it's so contrasting at the moment.
There seems to be two things here, Joe, if I'm thinking straight, which is that the fishing thing seems to be wholly separate from, he's not making the argument you must align with our, you know, rules on health and safety and blah, blah, blah. He just wants the fish, right? It's just a, he's trying to use his leverage as a bullying to get, you know, you can have access to our markets if you give us our fish, is basically what he's saying, isn't it? He'll give us your fish.
Yeah, that's one thing. Basically, what the kind of the message from the EU is, we want fish and we want this level playing field, which basically eliminates Britain from becoming more competitive and having access to the EU's markets, which is their two main fears. If we lose Britain's fish, it'd be French fishermen in uproar. Macron would be out of a job. You'd have loads of Belgian fishermen, loads of kind of Spanish fishermen, all kind of use our waters as kind of a holy grail. Because I was reading today that actually because of the cooling temperature around Britain in its waters, it's actually become a really vibrant place to catch fish. We have more fish than ever. And 30% of the turnover of French fishermen comes from British waters. So that's kind of industry breaking.
Yeah.
Kind of numbers if they are suddenly cut out of access.
You can see where they're quite keen to to retain access to those.
Exactly. And then, but you can see why we're so keen to reclaim, because it's all about sovereignty, all about being able to control our own destiny, and not having kind of our waters in the hands of bureaucrats in Brussels.
Yes, and what's your feeling? There seems to be a slight suspicion that Boris is about to sell out the fishermen, though, and use it as a bargaining chip and basically dance to Barnier's tune. What do you think?
So in the British mandate, so both sides put out kind of a text which kind of sets out what they want. And Boris said, look, we're kind of happy to do a fisheries deal, but it's going to be based on an annual negotiation of shared stocks and basically market access and quota sharing between. So you know what? I think the kind of the middle ground, the compromise kind of position here is actually we do what the EU says in terms of quota sharing and that, but we base it on an annual negotiation like Norway does with the EU. So the EU, Norway's not part of the common fisheries policy. It has its own separate kind of Norway-EU agreement. So that's what we do. So we say we've taken back control, but in reality, what we're doing is we're kind of accepting what the EU kind of puts forward in terms of quota shares and kind of market access. But we just do that on a rolling annual basis, and it'd best be a tick box exercise where the agriculture minister comes over, the fisheries minister comes over to Brussels and signs on the dotted line just to say, look, okay, we said you can this year, and maybe there might be a kind of a, we can revoke access if we think that you're being harsh on us somewhere else. But it's a hard circle to square. But in reality, the fishing industry is kind of an upsetting argument because it's become so symbolic. It's not actually as big as our financial services industry.
Yeah.
Some of the other manufacturing industries that Boris is probably desperate to have continued access for into EU markets.
I think the financial service industry is 200 times as big as the fishing industry. I mean, it's not even comparable, right? But it's just not as emotive, is it?
No, exactly. There was one statistic floating around a while back that Britain's fishing industry is as big as its sit-on lawnmower industry.
Okay.
And how many people do you know with a sit-on lawnmower?
Yeah, no,
well,
indeed.
In Brighton, yeah. Probably quite a few. But
this has taken a very fishy turn, enjoy it. What's your favourite type of fish, Paul, just quickly?
My daughter tells me I'm not allowed to eat cod, so haddock.
Okay, and Joe, your fish of choice, fish of the day?
I always like to say there's a time and a place for this.
Oh, good. Time and a place. Yeah. No, there was a delay, but I will blame that on the line. Obviously, after Boris's barnstorming speech on Monday, we saw the pound fell in value as the city kind of freaked out that he was going to be prepared to exchange tariffs for sovereignty. And it just does feel a little familiar, doesn't it? You know, this kind of back and forth. Dance to my tune, no dance to my tune between us and the EU. The market's a little bit volatile. Everyone freaks out. I mean, do we think that this negotiation for the trade deal was going to be any different to the way that the WAB rolled out? That's the withdrawal agreement bill. You know, is there going to be any change in tactic, or is this just what it's like when you try and negotiate?
I think it's going to be, Boris is obviously taking a much harder line, and there's going to be a lot more knocking of heads. But I think we can already see. I mean, the financial services industry, or sales to Europe, is worth about 26 billion a year, which is a lot of money.
And it
would be foolish to risk that in some ways for, dealing on quotas, on fishing quotas. But it is a really, really emotive issue to the British.
Absolutely. Right?
Much more than boring but fantastically wealthy financial services.
It tends to be how it goes.
But we don't really care because we have a massive history, massive maritime history, and a massive history of fishing our shores.
Yeah.
And it kind of, you know, it cuts into the British psyche somehow in the way that bankers probably never will.
And this is the Prime Minister who once famously said he was prepared to F business. I'll let your imagination
figure
out what that F word was.
Yeah. I think it was fish, wasn't it?
It all got very complicated. Would you like to join me down under with Dominic Raab?
Who are Mrs.?
He's down there. we've started trade negotiations and conversations, Joe, haven't we? Dominic Raab is in Australia with his counterpart. He's given a quite boring speech this morning, but you've got some theories about the symbolism of these ministers being kind of farmed out to far-flung and exotic places, haven't you?
Okay, so what we have for the first time in God knows how long, is actually a stonking Commons majority for the government. And what that enables them to do is to send ministers out on these kind of snoozing missions across the world and kind of roll out the diplomatic envoys and send them, like, actually using government ministers, your senior, kind of your top brasses, to actually go and conduct these meetings on the world stage, because they have no fear that the opposition is about to kind of crash their governments. They're not. Was it Margaret Thatcher back? She went to Paris and her government ended up on the end of collapsing. And Theresa May, for that reason, was always fearful of going abroad. But now Boris Johnson can jet off, Dominic Raab can jet off without having to. Any worries about having to rush back to the Commons for an emergency no-confidence vote.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I think the looming threat of Jeremy Corbyn isn't quite what it once was. Anyone's seen him for a few weeks. Were we impressed by Dominic Raab's performance? You know, does he deserve this place on the world stage? I mean, I speak as someone who obviously was an envoy for this great business yesterday at the Ozone Project. So I mean, I don't know if you want to draw some comparisons between my sort of diplomatic abilities and Dominic Raab's.
I think he's a very, very much... second class compared to yours, frankly, but it struck me that is he starting in the furthest away place that he can possibly find for trade negotiations? Then he's going to
work his way back.
And eventually end up in Calais.
This is the man who eats the same Pret lunch every day. Did you know? So he has a chicken and bacon baguette every day. So I'm not sure if they have Pret in Australia.
Well, he's probably getting them shipped out.
Do you think?
There's something for that kind of, you know.
That's our first trading point.
Yeah, exactly.
We can introduce Pret a Manger
to
whole new market.
You know how we used to turn the world
that
pink?
That famously British sounding company, Pret a Manger.
But when we used to turn the world pink with the Empire, we can now turn it that sort of maroon colour of Pret. I think it kind of works. He's a curious guy, isn't he? He said that we already have a trading business in place with Australia worth 17 million, but obviously the sky's the limit now, guys. And so there's talks of expanding that. And then he also is going to go to Japan afterwards. So this is a great gap year that he's on.
He's quite a difficult man to warm to, but I've got a buddy in what used to be called the Department for Brexit or whatever it's called. And he said that Dominic is a very clever guy and very quick at grasping situations. which I think is
apart from how close we are to Calais, because we do remember that sort of stark realization he had when he realized how close the UK was to
Calais.
We've
all made that mistake. I thought it was way further away.
Yeah, maybe he's been given a map for Christmas and he's swatted up and he's located Australia finally.
Well, that's maybe thought. Just
if he can name the country, he's allowed to go. Yeah. No, I'm sure
there
he's
is a funny there's a funny story about Dominic Raab in Brussels, though.
Is it rude?
I do hope.
No.
Okay. Is it funny?
He didn't make many friends while he was over here trying to conduct negotiations, and he basically became known as the Turnip because his name is similar to the translation for turnip in Dutch.
Oh, no.
So amongst the kind of the Dutch MEPs and the Dutch kind of officials in the council and the commission, they started naming him the Turnip. It was nothing to do with his kind of bald head.
So our most senior and respected envoy was called Turnip Boy then, was it?
Yes, basically. I don't think he didn't make many friends while he was over here in Brussels.
No, I think if I were to be a root vegetable, I should like to be a butternut squash because it's just got so many fun elements. What would you be, Paul, if you were a root vegetable?
Root vegetable.
You could be a sweet potato. The
level of debate
you could
is
be a parsnip.
Soaring this week.
I'm just trying to make it more accessible for people.
is a Brussels sprout a root vegetable?
Hey.
No, I'm afraid it isn't. Yeah. You could maybe be a parsnip, though, because they're sort of a bit misleading and you think it's a potato, but it's nowhere near as fun, is it, a parsnip? I'm not sure what yours is, Paul, but I'll think about it and come back to you.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, I think that must be enough for the trade negotiations for this podcast. It's exhausting.
It's going to be exhausting for Joe, for sure. Right. He's not getting shore leave. He doesn't get shore leave till Christmas. He'll be over to it'll be no, by Christmas, not. Joe, if you tell me.
Well, no, in reality, the EU trade deal, we hopefully will know what most of it is done by the time that kind of July rattles round and it comes to that deadline of the extension of the transition period, which Boris says he won't do. But will he be forced into it at a late notice if the EU hasn't actually done anything on his side, on their side, sorry. So I think we should know by then. But yes, you're right. It will probably go right down to the wire again, and we will be on that minute to midnight kind of train, hurtling towards a no deal, and then eventually something will get done, just like it happened this time.
We've been there before.
Oh, one more thought, actually, before we leave this. Just because I wrote a piece about it in the week, which is the other side of the trade thing, which was this notion, this idea that somehow standards are higher on the other side of the channel than they are over here, and that we somehow have to pull our socks up and meet EU rulings and levels rather than our own. And it's just not true. Our employment legislation has always been way ahead of the EU's.
More protection for maternity.
Absolutely. Working hours, et cetera, et cetera. And it's that kind of EU arrogance that, no, you must be as good as us. And it's like, actually, we're way ahead of you.
Yeah, we're way ahead of you. And you...
In some areas, not all the areas, but you know.
You illustrated your point with how many of them smoke in bars still.
Well,
eight bars of that.
When I don't know what it's like in Brussels, but when I was in Madrid everyone who just wants to fag just sparks up in a pub, in a bar, you know. God. And you would never see that over here because we're sticklers for rules. We and the rules not, is we don't do
we
it.
We don't,
you know,
smoke in the pub. Yeah, yeah, I thought that was quite a beautiful metaphor, actually.
Thanks a lot,
for
thanks, yeah.
You're a great writer.
No, can I just answer?
Yes, of course.
Because I had my hand stuck up in the middle of the Michel Barnier press conference. Only one British journalist had a question given to them, say 10 to multiple kind of foreign outlets. On Monday, and that's exactly what I wanted to ask him. I went, Mr. Barnier, would you, or I wanted to go, Mr. Barnier, what would you do if we asked to dynamically align to environmental standards? And that means you would have to match up with Britain's standards. And Boris, during the week, has kind of moved forward.
Yeah, another area, we're way ahead
about
of.
Cars.
Yeah.
And the EU are currently floundering, trying to convince, they had to do a kind of an EU 26 deal because Poland wouldn't sign up to their timings. To kind of become carbon neutral.
Yeah, of course.
They've had to throw hundreds of millions of pounds at them to kind of help them, or it's, you know, run into the billions to close coal-fired power stations. So that's where we actually kind of do lead the way on a lot of this. And Boris, I don't think, wants to diverge away from standards. What he does, he wants the right to do it. Mm. But I don't think it's even the case of actually diverging and slashing regulations.
I think that's a really key point, Joe. It's about having the right to do it, absolutely. But he won't do it. But it's just not having to take rules from people who no longer are in charge of us.
The Beastie Boys said it best when they said, fight for your right to party, I think.
I think so.
We all love a viral challenge. Will you be partaking in the Brexit red tape challenge? Do you know what it is? Do you want me to tell you?
I don't know what it is.
Sajid Javid is inviting us Brits to write in with things that currently exist in the EU rulebook that we want to put a big red line through and say, no, we're not doing it anymore, Mr. Javid. So he's opening up the letterboxes or the PO box probably for number 11, is it, where he lives?
Bendy Bananas.
Yes, exactly. And 100-watt light bulbs is another suggestion.
Okay.
But I wonder if we would all think over the next week about what EU regulations we just don't want to stick anymore and send it to Mr. Javid.
Okay.
That's great, isn't it? Okay, yeah. Hashtag Brexit Red Tape Challenge. It'll definitely catch on TikTok.
See, that's people's politics for you.
Yeah. Calling it a challenge, like it's something, like it's that like Drake dancing one. Yeah, exactly. Good reference. Yeah, so I'm excited to see how many he gets. And what is it in green ink? Is that what nutters write in?
I'm not sure that's a technical term anymore, but...
nutters. Impassioned yes, niche
it
pedants.
Used to be, yes, Green Ink Brigade.
Yeah, Green Ink Brigade.
Because the letters to newspapers were written in green ink, which is always a little bit of a, oddly enough, a red flag.
Yeah.
That it may not be wholly sane what you're about to read.
That was great to touch on what's going on in Brexit. Now we should come back to this great country. We've got a ton of things to talk about. I don't know what you want to lead with. We can do John Bercow. We could talk about the Labour Leadership Party.
I think Bercow. Yeah. It's just the hideousness that won't go away.
Yeah. So this is the sort of controversy surrounding the former Commons Speaker John Bercow and the row over his proposed peerage made by none other than Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah.
He has been. I mean, inundated with accusations of bullying from his peers, including the former Black Rod, whose name I've now lost.
David Leakey.
Yeah. And
Who is a tough guy, 40 years in the army,
yeah,
right?
Yes.
This is not a man you would bully lightly, I don't think.
No, not at all. Former Commons clerk Robert Rogers, who's now Lord Lisvain. You know, yeah, like you're saying, sort of super senior guys who you think probably, you know, are a little bit robust. Yeah. You know, coming out and talking about the kind of culture of intimidation and whatever else that John Bercow is alleged to have overseen. What do you think?
I think that if he gets peerage, the House of Lords days are numbered.
Send him to York.
I don't think the public will accept it anymore. It's beyond cronyism. It's just this is a whichever way you slice it up. He's a terrible man. He's an annoying. he's everything we hate in one small hideous package.
Okay.
I'm afraid, because he's got the arrogance of I've never known an arrogance, political arrogance or actual arrogance like it. He has got all these allegations hanging over him, which is just, you know, the public just won't wear it, right? The House of Lords cannot continue to be this kind of sinecure role for guys who've scratched politicians' backs. It can't be. There's a couple of, you know, decent people. There's Stephen Lawrence's mum's in there. And who would
the remarkable
be that
Doreen
kind of person
Lawrence.
Would be fantastic, absolutely. Floella Benjamin, who I also think is brilliant, and she's from Play School, so and she used to work with Brian Cant.
Fabulous.
So she's used to working with Cant, which probably helps in the House of Lords. I suspect.
Nicky Morgan's in there. Zach Goldsmith. I mean, it really is the great.
Two new Tories are being proposed today.
Ken Clark.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, which is course. The right thing.
And Philip Hammond, who we all love for being so fantastically pro-Britain in the
Brexit
the negotiations.
He was just doing the right thing.
Well,
but in his mind.
But again, you probably do need a second chamber as a check and balance on the first chamber. Right?
Yeah.
That's sensible. But to fill it with cronies who just haven't... It's just wrong. It's completely wrong.
So if you were to...
They haven't earned it. They haven't earned... The respect of the public, and that's the Bercow thing.
And is losing it kind of day by day.
Let's have more Doreen Lawrence's and more Floella Benjamin's,
I think,
and
in
less
life,
Bercows.
In life, I would say.
Yeah.
So your prediction would be that that this nomination won't be confirmed and that he won't join the House of Lords?
Well, it's very difficult because there is a tradition that the Speaker just gets straight into the House of Lords.
Would I be right in saying he'd be the only speaker, the first one ever, not to have been given a peerage?
But so it's a difficult political decision. But I think if he the whole respect, public respect will just completely disappear for that institution. And it should.
Yeah. I mean, you say that the second house is a great form of checks and balance. I mean, we haven't seen that over the pond, have we? In the days last night, as Donald Trump has been fully acquitted from his impeachment trial. But maybe that was more Nancy Pelosi's fault anyway.
Almost, yeah.
Obviously Diane Abbott, oh, she just chimes in, doesn't she, at the wrong time. Have you seen she's come to John Bercow's defence?
It's bizarre, isn't it?
Completely bizarre. He was a lieutenant general who served in Germany, Northern Ireland and Bosnia, so it seems unlikely that he was bullied. So she's sort of suggesting that if you were in the army, you couldn't have been bullied and that he's been making it up, which I think we'd all agree probably isn't true. And I think anyone can be bullied.
Diane, just shut up.
It doesn't feel the right time for chime in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There are other things to talk about.
Yeah.
Like Katy Perry being annoyed. Have you seen that she's been appointed as the ambassador of the Prince's Trust, the British ambassador of the Prince's Trust to prevent child labour in India? So that's Katy Perry, a Californian-born pop star who is not British, nor Indian.
It was a bit sketchy on her, where she was actually from there.
She sang, I don't know, California Girls.
I'm vaguely aware of her work.
Yeah, it goes like Orlando Bloom, previously married to Russell Brand. Again,
wear strange dresses.
Strange dresses, And so she's now been given the top job. Yeah. So, we had to talk about that because I thought it was utterly bizarre.
A slightly surreal twist in
a surreal twist to the podcast to this. But thanks for thanks, Diane. We'll remember that.
Yep.
Do you remember the Labour Party? We do this gag every week and it's funnier and funnier.
I do, indeed, yes. And can I just point out that we were supposed to have a Labour MP on the podcast today.
I didn't know if you wanted to mention that.
Yeah, I did. I absolutely did, because it was Rosina Allen-Khan, who is up for the... Well, she's vying for the deputy leadership.
She is.
And it would have been fantastic to have a Labour politician and a Labour voice in the podcast.
Absolutely.
But she just bottled it.
She did bottle it.
Many times, right? We've tried to set this interview up many times and she just bottled it in the end. And it's just another missed opportunity for to get a Labour voice out there, a Labour opinion out there.
And considering that they've got lots of seats and votes to win over when we go to the polls again, you think...
Why don't you just go and talk to The Guardian? There's a load of hearts and minds to win there.
Yeah, quite. Preaching quiet.
Anyway,
I agree.
Sorry, I was just annoyed.
No, and that's super annoying. We've got 59 days to go until the Labour leader is announced. In that time, a kangaroo could get pregnant and the baby Joey would be born. I learned that today in the Times.
Which would be more interesting.
Or,
and probably more productive.
Yeah, it's a little
and
baby
more
Joey.
Used to the world.
And we need more kangaroos in Australia, after the devastating wildfires. Yep. So just to give you a concept of how much longer we've still got.
Is the kangaroo in the running by any chance? Because she gets my vote.
They might be doing a better job. I mean, has anyone's opinions on this changed? Are we still sort of reluctantly giving it to Keir Starmer, but secretly want it to be Lisa and Andy? Joe, I don't know what you think.
It's all gone very quiet. I can't remember the last actually good kind of piece of kind of, whether it be commentary or even news about the Labour leadership. It's literally, I think, gone submarine on me. I literally have no opinion anymore. No one has said anything.
Oh my goodness.
No one has said anything that's going to change my kind of my mind and previous kind of ideas.
It's going to be a long 42 days, isn't it?
Yeah, like what?
59! 59! Oh my God, 59! Okay, it's not a premature Joey. Sorry.
What are they out doing? Are they like... I saw someone on my Facebook feed said they spotted a slightly lost Emily Formbury at Southend-on-Sea train station, Southend, Victoria. So are they just kind of travelling around, kind of canvassing people and hoping to garner extra votes? But they're not seeming to reach out to the masses anymore.
No, she has been sort of out and about the most. So she most recently was interviewed on the BBC and she said obviously it was a mistake to have in an election in December. And when asked how all the Labour Party under her would differ to that of the party currently under Corbyn, she said it would be more professional. We will be believable. We will be more credible. And people will say, thank goodness, the Labour Party's back. I mean, that's the level of kind of commentary and insight and kind of fierce fighting talk we're getting out of them. I kind of know what you mean. Are we being bad and not paying attention, or is it just not that
paying
sexy?
Attention, it's just hard to care, isn't it? Because whoever wins it is going to be a voice in the wilderness, I'm afraid.
Mm.
Unless Boris throws it all away by listening too much to Dominic Cummings and feeds into his God complex.
What a delicious segue that was. So Dominic Cummings has been making a few noises, hasn't he, recently? There was obviously the... behaviour in the lobby, which we will talk about, and also his war on the BBC. And I know you've got strong opinions on both, Paul. What do you think?
The lobby thing, which is a bit of an industry thing, and I know, but the government of the day cannot pick and choose which journalists they get into press briefings. Yeah. They just can't. They can in Russia. They always have been able to in Stalinist Russia. I'm sure they can in North Korea and China.
Lovely, this time of year.
But in Britain, in free democratic Britain, we don't like that. We think whatever the hue of the you know, the newspaper or the news organisation of the journalist, all journalists get free, the same access.
Yeah. So this was the news that sort of various sort of left-leaning, I guess we'd call them, or sort of slightly hostile government papers to the government were denied access to the lobby in the morning, which included our stablemate, the Daily Mirror, Huffington Post, and a few other titles. Yeah. I mean, agreed. Is this maybe part of some bigger Dom Cummings genius plan? Like, is there a way that we've all kind of fallen into the trap? I don't really know why. Oh, I've lost an earring. I don't know. I mean, it just seems too blatantly Stalinist to start leaving key members of the press out of your morning briefing.
It's what we were saying last week, that he's untouchable in Parliament at the moment, but he's not untouchable in the court of public opinion. And the Tories could be in power for two or three
many kangaroos rather could be born.
Yeah, repopulate the entire the whole of Australia. But unless Boris starts acting a little bit like he's acting right now, like he's the king of the world.
Yeah.
Right? Because we don't like that. Again, that's why we're leaving the EU, because we don't like people telling us how to act, telling us how to think, or you know. And that's a little feeling that's coming out of number 10 at the moment.
Yeah. Joe, how was that? How has this kind of Dom Cummings stuff been received on the continent? Is anyone paying attention to him in Brussels? You know, do we see him as this kind of incredibly influential figure with a hold over the Prime Minister, or is he seen as this kind of badly dressed dweeb with an obsession with wearing two scarves? Did you see those pictures of him wearing two scarves? What a killer.
On his dress sense, that's a parody, surely. I think he's doing it to deliberately kind of annoy people.
it's absolutely working.
He was. Do you remember there was these kind of all these off the record kind of number 10 source quotes about ruining Brussels through no deal and stuff like that ahead of the kind of the October deal? And they were just kind of going, look, it's not even subtle. We know exactly who it is, and we all know it's just kind of posturing in the hope of kind of forcing a compromise. And in the end, they saw the compromise was actually done by Boris Johnson. And when he basically recreated the Northern Ireland only backstop, which was voted down several times with a bit of lipstick on. And then I think they actually realised, actually, Boris is still very much in control. Dom Cummings might want to portray himself as this mastermind, but actually he's losing out on kind of all these internal battles. So I think Boris sided with Sajid Javid when they wanted to do more on kind of spending, when Dominic Cummings wanted to have all these spending. Dominic Cummings wanted to dismantle the civil service and run it in some sort of mothership out of number 10. Boris has actually said, no, I think I don't mind the civil service. It might need a few reforms, but actually your idea is a bit crazy. Let's not do that. So I think at the moment we can kind of portray Dominic Cummings as a pantomime villain. And I think his power is probably generally waning in Whitehall.
Like all good pantomimes, the good prevails. Overall, good podcast.
He's behind you.
just finally, before we wrap, have you got your shoulders out, chaps? Because you mustn't.
I've got the oblique reference. Yes. I'm wearing an off-the-shoulder number for the podcast. It's only a shame that you can't see.
It's a shame. Put them away. Tracy Braben wore an off-the-shoulder black dress available on ASOS and has been met by some pretty serious vitriol on Twitter and other places for disrespecting the chamber. She tweeted, I'd like to confirm that I'm not a slag, I'm not hungover, I'm not a tart, I'm not about to breastfeed, I'm not a slapper, I'm not drunk, and I haven't just been banged over a wheelie bin. She was just wearing quite a nice frock. Is this an example of hashtag everyday sexism? I know a cause that you guys are keen to resolve and take really seriously. Is this part of the culture wars? Was Jacob Rees-Mogg, when he lounged all over the front benches in his double-breasted suit during the WAB debates, more disrespectful?
Well, the sexism fight is one that me and Joe have been at the forefront of for many years. And so obviously we took this very seriously. Mm. Oh, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't have really noticed it, really. I mean, it was, I guess if I was an MP and I turned up in a T-shirt, they would probably say, what, you know, WTF, why hasn't got a suit on? They were just a kind of uniform, I guess.
It wasn't an unsmart dress, though, it was. It was pretty corporate.
I find it hard to get my knickers in a twister box because.
Oh, so does she. She's probably not wearing any. No, I'm sure she was.
I think it was unwise, probably.
Oh, of her?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's interesting. So she gave an interview to LBC. She said, it's a challenge about women in politics. They're too fat, they're too thin, they're too plain, they're too good looking. We can't win. It's always about how we look and never what we say.
That's true. That's absolutely all.
That is true, isn't it?
But what I'm saying is, if knowing what the ground rules are, why would you necessarily put yourself in the front line? I don't think she was actually striking a blow for feminism.
Well, I think it's interesting that we just
accidentally wore a dress that we hadn't seen in Parliament before. That's all.
Women had shoulders. Actually, I didn't know. I didn't even know I had one. Apparently, I've got two. I mean, it's interesting that we talk about Dom Cummings, who, yeah, likes to turn up at number 10 with his sort of jeans hanging around his bottom and wearing two scarves and has an incredibly important role and doesn't seem to be criticised on it. Whereas an MP wears a smart, quite trendy dress and, you know, is kind of hounded on Twitter and told that she's has her moral, her morality brought into disrepute.
When it happened, I looked around the office to see, is that considered to be normal office wear, for example, an off-the-shoulder dress? And I couldn't see any. That's all I'm saying. I realise I'm slightly thin ice here, but
this is interesting.
But do you know what I mean?
There is though quite a strict set of rules for dress code in the chamber.
But it wasn't an unsmart dress. I mean, we're saying off the shoulder. It was an asymmetric corporate dress that has a kind of draping over the shoulder.
But you'd kind of think if someone walked in the office, you're going to a party after or something. What's you know?
Oh, do you think, really? I think so, yeah. She was going to a Labour party.
Hey.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm glad we've solved the sexism, feminism.
It's not a lot of fun.
You wouldn't
minute.
Know. I don't think you've ever been invited, darling. We've done it all. We've done trade. We've done fish. We've done root vegetables. We've done Burko. We've done bullying. We've done Cummings.
The whole of life.
Oh, my God. That was incredible, wasn't it? Yeah. And not a crossword uttered. And we've all learned how long it takes to gestate. Is it a baby kangaroo? Joey? 59 days?
There you go.
Yeah, good for the pub quiz. Joe, thank you so much for joining us. It's an honour and a privilege as always.
No, thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
And we will see you all next Wednesday it'll be.
Next Wednesday.
Yes, I haven't got any prior engagements.
Yeah, next Wednesday. Yeah. Back on timetable.
Back on the timetable. Indeed. All right, take care. Ta-ra, ta-ra. Well done for making it to the end of an episode of Brexit, the Final Countdown. If you're still enjoying the countdown, you can subscribe for free. And if you're really enjoying the countdown, you can also leave us a review.